Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thanks for listening. Here's the number, 888-914-9149. We can get you on the air with your comment or question. I'd love to talk to you. 888-914-9149. Nancy and I, this past weekend, we were up at Hillsdale College in southern Michigan. Really a beautiful campus, not terribly large, but large enough and quite beautiful. And the reason I mention it is that one of our sons, one of our youngest sons, Theodore, he just graduated with a master's in politics. It's part of the bigger political philosophy program. And he's actually on his way to getting a PhD there. So I think he's about halfway through the PhD program. And so we had an opportunity to visit there. Truly beautiful. But one thing I wanted to mention in passing was that even though Hillsdale College is it's Protestant. I mean, it was founded something like 145 years ago, and it was founded by, wouldn't you know, I'm going to blank on the denomination, but it was a Protestant denomination, and it has maintained its Protestant identity all this time. But one thing that I found very interesting in getting to know this school is how many people become Catholic. I mean, professors and students, and they go and it, because it's a kind of a classical curriculum, and they study like big picture issues, and it's one of those places where when people's minds are opened, when your mind is opened to the beauties of, you know, a liberal arts education in its fullness, your mind is opened, your soul becomes opened. And I just wanted to mention that. It's just a really interesting thing to see how many people who go there, maybe as perhaps, I don't know, Baptist or Episcopal or Calvinist or Lutheran or what have you, over the years, that more and more and more people are becoming Catholic. And it was my first visit to Hillsdale College. As I say, beautiful campus. But if you're interested in seeing our young lad who's proudly holding his master's degree diploma, I posted a picture of that on Twitter. And maybe later today I'll post a picture of Nancy and me and him. But it was a great experience. So I wanted to mention that. Also, I want to mention this story. This is one of these beautiful examples of hope and encouragement in a world where things do not look so good sometimes. This has to do with a young woman who was diagnosed with cancer, and she was told to get an abortion, and she said no. Here's the story. This is from Life News. A Detroit, Michigan pro-life advocate refused to give up hope when she found out she had terminal breast cancer while pregnant with her youngest son. Her name's Jessica Hanna, and she said she has been passionate about the pro-life issue ever since she was young, and her pregnancy last year challenged her to put her beliefs into action. She said it was just a journey of, well, now you've talked the talk, the pro-life talk. Now you've become the woman everybody uses in their arguments. What if the woman's life is in danger? And now it's time for me to walk the walk, she says. Even though several doctors advised her to have an abortion, she chose life. A Catholic, she prayed and asked people on social media to pray as well, and eventually she was healed of cancer. Before getting pregnant with her son, she said she noticed a dent in her breast and went to the doctor. The doctor, unfortunately, misdiagnosed it, saying the abnormality was benign. Less than a month went by, and she discovered that she was pregnant. At an appointment with her OBGYN, she asked the doctor to take a look at this dent, and the doctor determined that it was actually cancerous. At 14 weeks of pregnancy, she said she learned that she likely had terminal breast cancer. The tumor was 13 centimeters, and the doctors believe the cancer was probably spreading to the rest of her body. She said she sought opinions from approximately 10 different doctors, and more than one of them advised her to do, you know what, have an abortion. She says, but it wasn't necessary at all. my prognosis didn't change. My treatment plan did not change, pregnant or not pregnant. She said, many people are not aware chemotherapy can actually be quite safe during pregnancy. I chose the middle road. She said that I should do something, do some chemotherapy with some modifications. While she underwent chemotherapy, she prayed for healing regularly. She and her husband later named their son Thomas Solanas after Blessed Father Solanas Casey, who is one of the saints that she was praying to, asking for his intercession. She said, I prayed at his tomb for me to be miraculously healed and for my son to come out beautiful and healthy. Hoping to encourage others struggling with difficult pregnancies, she also set up a social media page to share her story and to ask people to pray for her. She thought, I thought no suffering should ever go to waste. I don't know where God is taking me. Is he going to take me to the path where I need to show people how to die gracefully with his grace and mercy? Or is he going to show a miracle? She gave birth to a healthy baby boy, the first miracle. Then doctors discovered that the chemotherapy had worked and she was in remission. And if not for her son, Thomas, she said she might not be alive. She says, he's the one who actually saved my life, because if it weren't for me getting pregnant, I wouldn't have double-checked the dent. She encouraged women who are struggling to trust in God and remember that they are not alone, because Christ also suffered. By sharing her story, she said she hopes to encourage others to hope in times of trouble. She said, I decided to use social media that no matter what you think is going to happen, it's trust in God that is the most important, that you are going to abandon your own desires and wants, and you're going to leave it at the foot of the cross and let him take care of it. And boy, did he. What a beautiful thing. 888-914-9149. By the way, before we go to the phones, real quick, if you're interested, speaking of babies, the Social Security Administration has released the 20 most popular baby names. This is from 2022. Here they are. You ready? Let me give you the... I'll start with the boys' names. How about that? So the top 10 baby boys' names in the United States, based on the number of births and the children who are named these names. At the very top is Liam. Number two, Noah, followed by Oliver, James, Elijah, William, Henry, Lucas, Benjamin, and Theodore. And what strikes me about this is that all of them are either biblical names, with the exception of Liam, are biblical names, or they are traditional Christian saints' names. Now, that may be true for Liam as well. There may be a Saint Liam in the UK somewhere. I don't know the provenance of that particular name, but for all I know, maybe there was a Saint Liam long ago. And I can just see people pulling up to their computers right now to type me an email to say, yes, it was this person or that person. That's okay. I appreciate that. Here are the top 10 girls' names. I'm pleased to see that, by the way. I really am. I'm just pleased to see a kind of retention of some of these traditional names, both biblical and traditional Christian. So here are the top 10 baby girl names in these United States, starting at the top. Number one, Olivia. And I don't know, is that named after Mrs. Walton? The mother on the Waltons, her name was Olivia. Emma is number two, followed by Charlotte, Amelia, Sophia, Isabella, Ava, Mia, Evelyn, and Luna. Luna, by the way, is the Latin word for moon. So here, too, I'm encouraged, because these are either, you know, biblical names, or they are traditional Christian names, or some variant of that. And that makes me happy to see that. I've been the guy who's always been saying, hey, parents, name your kids traditional saints' names. And not that they're doing this because of me, but I'm glad to see it.
What a change. I mean, five years ago, people were naming their kids after Game of Thrones characters.
Is that so? I never watched Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I remember every year you give this little list. And I remember one year there was these weird Game of Thrones names. I was like, that's...
like Darth?
No. Or I can't even think. Khaleesi was one of them.
Khaleesi, yeah.
Yeah.
That was on the list?
That was on the list. Yeah, you read that. You said the word Khaleesi on the air.
And I had no idea who it was. Yeah, somebody once referred to the Game of Thrones. I read an article, and they referred to it as wizard porn. And that was like, okay.
Yeah, that's not accurate. That's enough for me. There's no wizards.
Oh. Well, in that case, all the more reason. But when I saw that, I thought, yeah, no.
Yeah, stay away.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that kind intervention. Let's go to Lisa now in, where is Lisa? In Milwaukee. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. I have two things that I wanted to talk about. I am one of the women that had a choice by my doctor to abort my baby when I was going to have an emergency surgery. He offered, well, he didn't offer. He said, "You could, it's going to abort the baby, but you can always have more." And he said, I asked him if there was another choice. And he said, well, you can just, my gallbladder was terrible. He said, you can, you know, have a bland diet for the whole pregnancy and, you know, just like have it afterwards. So that's what I did. And I will say that at my son who is born now 21 years later, he came to me with a heartbeat necklace, and it was so touching. And he was like, thanks, Mom, for choosing that.
I can imagine. Choosing life. Oh, my gosh. Yep. So, I can imagine the thought process, you know, in the doctor saying to you, well, on the one hand, you could kill your unborn child, or on the other hand, a bland diet for the next 8 months, you know. Well, that's a no-brainer.
First choice. You would think that would be the first choice.
Yeah.
The bland diet, right? Then.
I guess I can believe it, but. My initial reaction would be if a doctor were to say that to my wife and me, if she were, you know, back when we were young parents, I'd say, you're fired. You're fired. if your first instinct is to encourage us to abort our unborn child, you're fired. We're going to go find another doctor. Thankfully, it never happened, but I'm a bit of a hothead when it comes to things like that.
You know what? But I think because there's people that are non-believers, they believe in the doctors, so they choose that. They choose that
way. I believe
in
the doctors, too. Yeah. I'm all about believing in doctors. I'm grateful for doctors, that's for sure. But if a doctor's first default position is, well, kill it, I'm moving on. I'm moving to another doctor. I'm not rebuking you. Don't misunderstand, Lisa. I'm not saying anything about your situation.
No.
It's just...
I heard the voice of God telling me, you have a choice. He's giving you a choice and choose life and not death. That's what he said to me.
That is so beautiful.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
You talked about Anne Frank's book.
Yeah.
And you were in seventh grade. I also was in seventh grade when I read it. What did you get out of it?
Well, going back in my mind, because I haven't read it since then, but I recall being horrified by the fact that a girl died. In other words, that these Nazis were so merciless and so implacable that she died. I mean, she was, well, you know the story. I mean, she was holed up with her family and behind a wall in a house, and I forget if it were, you know, Rotterdam or whatever the city was that they were in. And they, first of all, living this terrible life of having to be hidden away, and they could never go out, and they could never walk in the park or anything. And I just remember being caught up in the sadness of her story, but it just got worse when, you know, her diary was interrupted and she went off to the death camp and she died. So as I recall, Lisa, to answer your question, my biggest impression was just horror that this beautiful girl had died that way. And it was just very, very shocking to me. I don't think I had ever really encountered the reality of what the Nazis were doing. I mean, I knew about it in a vague sort of way, I guess, but it never really was made personal to me till I read that book. So that it made a big impact on me.
It did me too. And the reason why I brought it up is because now they want to put books into the school on, I think it's called critical race theory.
Yeah.
And I just wondered what that would do to a child. It's mine. I mean, for Anne Frank's book, it was terrible. You know what I mean? It was terrible for a little girl to be reading about another little girl being killed. You know what I mean? So I was just wondering how that's going to fit in our new world. It was, you know, children learning about men and women murdering, you know, other children.
I totally understand. I would recommend, if you're interested in, well, maybe you're not personally interested, but if you want to understand from the horse's mouth, so to speak, the problems with critical race theory, I would read, and this is a book that I got some time ago and have been going through it. It's called Critical Race Theory, The Key Writings That Formed the Movement. Now, this is pro-critical race theory. It's a big book. It's like the size of a telephone book. It's like the size of, you know, the white pages. And it's excerpts from all the major figures and many of the minor figures who are pushing critical race theory. And I mean, I've read a number of critiques of it, but if you want to get it straight from the horse's mouth and see why this is just warmed over racism, it's just a different form of racism, I would recommend this book, Critical Race Theory, The Key Writings That Formed the Movement. It's horrendous. And the more you read of it, the more you realize this is a terrible ideological cancer that is dramatically in a very deleterious way affecting people's mindset, where they've just simply, maybe they were never racist to begin with, but they've adopted a kind of deep racism under the guise of being anti-racist. So
I can see that. No, I am interested because being biracial, I could answer people, you know what I mean?
Right.
On both sides. You know what I mean? So I can answer it on both sides because, like I always want to say to people, white power and black power, what's the difference?
People are people.
You know,
and if you're racist toward any group of people, that's racism. It doesn't matter what their skin color is if you marginalize them or dehumanize them or exclude them just because of their color of their skin. It's just a form of racism. Well, I'm glad you called, Lisa. I really am. And it's interesting. I haven't really talked much about Anne Frank in many years, so it's interesting to kind of revisit that in my mind. Thank you for that. We're going to take a break. This, by the way, is not the Pet Shop Boys, but you might be surprised if you didn't listen closely. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. Thanks again for your generosity during this last pledge drive. We made it to our goal. Thanks to you and to God's grace. If you're still interested in participating, you can go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app. Thank you for your generosity. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Let's see. Here's the number to call to be on the program. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go over to Molly now in Portland, Maine. Hi, Molly.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my son is a kindergartner in a public school. He will be in first grade next year, and he has the possibility of having four different teachers. One of those teachers is transgendered, and it does not identifies as a they. So my husband and I are very concerned that he will be assigned this teacher, and we do have the availability to write a letter to the principal. We can't request teachers, but we can talk about needs that our child might have for classroom placement.
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
I'm not trying to short circuit your comment. And I know you're a concerned mom. My heart goes out to you and your husband, Molly. It really does. If I were you, I wouldn't worry about any of those things, writing letters or anything. I would just simply take my son out of that school. No questions asked. Okay. No hesitation. under no circumstances would I allow a kindergarten child to be thrust into that situation. And I mean, I'm not here to tell you, you know, your business, that's up to you and your husband. But if it were me, I would say, son, you're either going to a different public school, or hopefully if there's a Catholic school in the area, we'll put you there. And if that's not possible, then we're going to homeschool you. But I, under no circumstances would allow my kindergartner to be subject to that.
And you think even if he, just because of the culture of the school, even if he had a different teacher that was not the same gender teacher?
Yes. No,
because
I understand.
Because I feel like then when my next son comes along, it will be the same problem.
I think this problem is going to increase maybe for a long time before it ever gets better. And so the likelihood of children in the future being subject to this wretched ideology is going to be much higher, it seems to me. I hope not, but I think things are trending in that direction. But here's what I mean, Molly. Yeah. If you were to write this letter, I would not be surprised if they said, oh, Molly doesn't want her son to have a transgender teacher. Guess who his teacher is going to be? We're going to make sure that this kid has this transgender teacher. I mean, I could see.
Yeah, that was my husband's thought too.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's just the cynic in me that would think that. But it's like, it seems like it would be like waving a, you know, I don't know that, I think bulls are colorblind, but let's just say they can see the red, you know, waving a red cape in front of a bull. I kind of get the impression that they might single out your child for retribution against you for being a hater because you don't want your son. So if this is what's going on in the school, then there's just no way I would have my kids in that school. No way.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do
it. Yeah, I agree. I think what's frustrating is that he has special needs. So he had some of the services that only a public school really provides that benefit him the most. But we do have him shadowing at a private school, a Catholic school tomorrow. So
well,
we may have
to
just make it work. Yeah.
You know, the Diocese of Portland, and I have no connections there. I don't know anything other than just I know that the diocese is there. But I wouldn't be surprised if in their education department they have resources and some opportunities for special needs children, because obviously in the Catholic school system there will be special needs children. So I wouldn't be surprised if you got in touch. They might have some good news for you there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And, you know, we can make it work and support him in whatever way. But yeah, I agree that I don't want that ideology for my six-year-olds.
I know. And, you know, the most important thing of all, Molly, if you ask me, is that your son is innocent. He's an innocent little child. You know this. You don't need me to tell you this, but he's innocent. And and for these ridiculous so-called adults in these schools to forcibly tear away the innocence from these children is so reprehensible and so vicious that it just infuriates me. I mean, eventually, at some point, these kids are going to have to know about this stuff. But at, my gosh, at 6 years of age, when they're still so innocent, it is reprehensible.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you for your help
and your input.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Molly. I'm sorry you and your husband have to go through this, but this is the brave new world we live in. Let's go now to Joseph in Minneapolis. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning, Patrick. The promo about Relevant Radio talked about surprising conversations, and so I hope I can maybe add to that a little bit. But I was just thrilled when I heard you talking about Hillsdale College and that you'd been there, because I've been bombarded by Hillsdale College on Facebook with wonderful announcements talking about they're going to have an online course called The History of the Christian Faith, Ancient Christianity. And the only thing this, you know, this brief paragraph doesn't mention is the Catholic Church. But the course says the history of ancient Christianity is intertwined with the history of Rome. To understand how the Christian faith and worship developed and spread, you need to understand the Roman Empire and its reaction to this new religion. Join Dr. Kenneth Calvert for an examination of people and practices of the Christian faith during the age of the Roman Empire. And the threads on this, I can't help but wonder how many of these people that have chimed in are former students at Hillsdale College that must have become Catholic, because there's so much dialogue on a number of these threads, and the mentions of Scott Hahn and Dr. Kraft and Surprised by Truth. And I just can't help but wonder, I've listened to to Dr. Larry Arndt talk once, and his talk was so potent, except there was a small part of it that he was talking about campus life and things. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is just a step away from the fullness of the truth. You're so close. But, you know, the issues of contraception and things like that, you know, they just don't talk to their students about the things that Jesus wants for them. And I can't help but wonder.
If I can interject, Joseph, forgive my interruption. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I'm aware, you know, only recently, of course, because I have a son who's doing the PhD there. But I've become aware that there is a great deal of ferment and has been for years on campus at Hillsdale, which by everything I can see seems to be an absolutely wonderful place. And there is a great deal of ferment, intellectual ferment and theological ferment, such that many people who maybe go there as an undergraduate or even maybe as a faculty member wind up becoming Catholic. So there's a lot of movement in that direction, and I think that's the best kind of dynamic where people can sift through the evidence and look at scripture and church history and come to some conclusions. And the fact that that open dialogue is present at Hillsdale, that makes me very happy. I'm really happy that they're doing that.
Well, you're articulating my point much better than I am, so I hope that I didn't say anything that would have contradicted that, because...
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, okay. Okay, and so I'm just thrilled that this is going on, because there are people there who are just seeking truth with a sincere heart, and it sounds like it includes the college a little bit too. So I just think only perhaps good things may come of this, and we can pray. So, but that being said, the reason why I called is because when I was reading, and I can't, you're going to have to help me here, I guess, I don't know if it was Matthew or Acts yesterday, but where Jesus says, talks about John the Baptist and how, you know, and how great he is. And yet the least of those in heaven are greater than he. And I'm just wondering, is this in some way indicative of support for purgation?
Okay. Well, first, if thinking of, I think it's Matthew, where Jesus says, truly I say to you, among those born of women, there has arisen no one greater than John the Baptist, yet the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Is that what you're thinking of?
That's exactly right. And so I think, isn't that an indicator that something has to take place, even though this man is as great as Jesus says, those in heaven, the least of them, are greater than he. And so I can't help but wonder if indirectly anyway, isn't that sort of an argument for purgatory?
I see where you're headed with this. Okay. At first glance, that's not what I would have thought. I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that's the inference that we could draw here for this reason, because when Jesus says the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he's not referring to those in heaven. Number one, because there was no one in heaven at that point. He had not yet died on the cross, and the gates of heaven were still closed. So there was nobody in heaven. He's referring to the kingdom of heaven on earth. And so I would say the classical Catholic understanding of this passage, as I understand it, is he's making a juxtaposition between the inferiority of the old law, the old covenant, and the superiority of the new covenant, and how St. John the Baptist, even though he had sort of been, he was the epitome, you might say, of greatness in the old covenant, that he was still, even he could be reckoned as, you might say, inferior to the kingdom of heaven, and even the least in the kingdom of heaven. And I don't think that he was necessarily saying specifically as an individual human being, but he was drawing attention to the inferiority of the old covenant. And that's what I think he's referring to there, not anybody who's in heaven. Ergo, I don't think this is a passage that would really, that one could infer purification in purgatory before one enters into heaven. Do you see how I'm arriving at that conclusion?
I do, and I appreciate the clarification, and that's why I wanted to ask you. So thank you for taking my call and answering.
You're welcome, Joseph. Great chatting with you. Let's do it again soon. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let me draw your attention, everybody, to something that I saw on Twitter this morning as I was preparing to be with you today doing my show prep. And this is from a fellow by the name of Joshua Charles. I don't know who he is. And I don't mean that in any, I don't mean that in any dismissive way at all. I just said, I'm not familiar with him, but apparently he's a convert. And he wrote something that I'd like to share with you. I did retweet it on my Twitter feed at Patrick Madrid. So if you're interested, you can go there and you can see it. But he says, the church father who red-pilled me about my Protestantism and finally got me to look into the claims of the Catholic Church was a disciple of the Apostle John, St. Ignatius of Antioch. On point after point, this disciple of an apostle was teaching profoundly Catholic doctrine most or sometimes all of my Protestant forebears had abandoned, supposedly in the name of being quote-unquote biblical. But for this disciple of an apostle, Catholic doctrines were biblical, and Protestant ideas are nowhere found in his, nowhere to be seen in his writings. Here are 10 points he affirmed that shocked me into reality. Please note that this gentleman is a convert to the Catholic Church from Protestantism. So he gives a list, 10 of them. The real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, the New Testament ministerial priesthood. Christian worship equals the sacrifice of the Eucharist. We become Christians through being spiritually regenerated in baptism, aka baptismal regeneration. So he's giving a list of the things that St. Ignatius of Antioch was teaching very clearly in his epistles at the very beginning of the second century. So he knew, he was deeply acquainted with St. John the Apostle. He was a disciple of St. John the Apostle. He learned the gospel from St. John the Apostle. And what is he doing? He's saying, this is what the apostles taught me. And what does that include? Well, baptismal regeneration, the real presence of Christ in the Holy Eucharist, the priesthood of Jesus in the New Testament, the sacrifice of the Mass. Continuing with his list here, number 5, Christians can forfeit their salvation through grave sin, including heresy and schism. The authority in the church is exercised by bishops who are successors of the apostles, the apostolic succession. Lay Christians must be under a successor of the apostles' authority, referring to a bishop, and cannot start their own independent congregations. The Church of Rome has greater authority than other churches. Schism and heresy from the one true church possessing the one true faith is not of Christ and is always unacceptable. This one true church is called the Catholic Church. He says all of this was apparent in just 7 short letters written as he proceeded to his martyrdom in Rome. St. Ignatius of Antioch forever changed my life. He gave me a glimpse into the truth that the biblical church was and always has been the Catholic Church, and that my inherited Protestantism, far from being a restoration of the primitive church and gospel, was a complete departure from it. One example of many, and he's giving here a quote, and this is from St. Ignatius of Antioch in his epistle to the Smyrnians, who says, "See that you all follow the bishop, even as Jesus Christ does the Father, and the presbytery as you would the apostles." And presbytery there is referring to the priests of the diocese, the presbyters, the priests of that diocese. He says, "See that you follow them as you would the apostles, and reverence the deacons as being the institution of God. Let no man do anything connected with the church without the bishop. Let that be deemed a proper Eucharist, which is administered either by the bishop or by one to whom it has been entrusted. Wherever the bishop shall appear, there let the multitude of the people also be, even as wherever Jesus Christ is, there is the Catholic Church. It is not lawful," he says, "without the bishop, either to baptize or to celebrate a love feast," that's referring to the Mass, "but whatsoever he shall approve of, that is also pleasing to God, so that everything that is done may be secure and valid." And that's just a snippet. So anyway, I reference that only because you've heard me say this endlessly on this program, that the early church was Catholic, and you've heard me talk about St. Ignatius of Antioch many times over the years, including these specific things. But it's nice to see a convert, yet another convert, I should say, Joshua Charles is his name. You can find him on Twitter. He's saying the same thing, and he's saying, I guess I'm putting words into his mouth, but I know exactly what he means. He says, I couldn't argue this away. If you think that the early church was like non-denominational, think again. If you think that the early church was Lutheran or Baptist or Calvinist or Calvary Chapel, what have you, think again. And all you have to do to prove to yourself that the early church was Catholic with a capital C, calling itself Catholic, believing these doctrines, is just read the writings of these early church fathers who, like St. Ignatius of Antioch, testify, and in his case, he testified with his own blood. He died as a martyr, torn apart by lions in the amphitheater in Rome. He actually had to urge the Christian folk, please don't try to rescue me because I want to go to heaven. I want to become the food of these lions so that I can get to heaven. Please don't try to stop this from happening. That's how intent he was upon getting to heaven. And he sealed his testimony that the early church was indeed Catholic. It wasn't Mormon, wasn't Jehovah's Witness, wasn't Baptist, wasn't Lutheran, wasn't any of those things. It was Catholic. And when people discover this, it's like, oh my gosh, everything that I've been taught or everything I heard about the Catholic Church and worshiping statues and all this stuff that isn't true, by the way, trying to earn their salvation, all this stuff that's not true. I mean, when they suddenly come face to face with the reality that these men and women who knew the apostles were Catholic, and why were they Catholic? Because the apostles were Catholic. You get the idea. So check it out. And I would encourage you to read the writings of the early church. If you're on the fence, maybe you're Catholic curious, check it out. Let's go to a quick call before we take our break. Anna in Cary, North Carolina. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. It's sure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for all the information you give on the show.
You're welcome.
Just wanted to give a little support to Molly and let her know that I had had my kids in public school for 10 years. It never gets better. So
you mean from the parent standpoint?
From the you're always writing letters. You're always checking things. Nothing's ever enough. You'll get answers that, or you won't get answers. They don't have to do anything for you. So, if she can start her path, maybe it'll be hard to homeschool or hard to find a private school that services any special needs. She's far better there than having an activist person who's already in an elementary school.
Yeah.
Who
you're talking about
really
the mom who called in a little while ago. She has a kindergarten age son.
That's right.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, it's very confusing for them. They tend to feel sorry for the people who seem to be troubled. The schooling now for educators is very social activist. And so they're very, very intent on contaminating youth. They have no qualms about it.
They're committed to their agenda, and they will stop at nothing to achieve it, right?
No. And they really want to get to the young ones. I actually had our babysitter who was lovely, but she went through an App State program in North Carolina, and she had told me that her dedication was to going to maybe like Baltimore in an underserved area and teaching them about gender fluidity. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And they said, what about teaching people how to read? And really, they are so committed. So anyway,
Thank God that you and your husband were vigilant and you hung in there, Anna. I hope there's a happy ending for your kids.
Yes.
And thanks for that encouragement. I'm sure there are a lot of moms and dads out there listening right now who needed to hear what you just said. Thank you for that, Anna. I'll be right back.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and thank you once again for your generosity. This past week was Pledge Drive, and thanks be to God and your generosity. Over 14,000 of you stepped forward and helped Relevant Radio, and we made our goal, and then some. So thank you. And if you weren't able to participate, we have the door held open for you for another day or two if you want to add your pledge by going to Relevant Radio or using the relevantradio.com or using the Relevant Radio app. There's still time. We'll count your pledge if you want to do that. But just a word of gratitude to all of you who participated. We couldn't be here. We wouldn't be here without you. So thank you very much. Let's go now to Pat listening in Dallas. Good morning, Pat. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling to comment on Molly, who called in about the child in kindergarten again.
Yeah. Right.
I was a special education teacher for 20 years in California and in middle school. And frequently, I had to travel to private schools to do IEP meetings and make goals and things like that. But at a younger age, maybe speech services and stuff, they did a lot of evaluations with younger kids. If you reside in the district, then they are kind of bound because you pay taxes to do that. It could not be that way in Maine. I don't know, but it's certainly worth a try.
Oh, that's good advice. That reminds me of how kids who are homeschooled. Oh, sorry, Pat. Go ahead.
I would certainly approach the district is all I had to say.
No, that's good. Excellent advice. This sounds to me like kids who are homeschooled, that they can participate in the sports programs at local public high schools because of what you just said. They participate by taxes, so they have a right to do that. I think that's excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what department would they ask for if they were to call up, let's say, the local Catholic grammars, or I'm sorry, the local public school? What department would they ask for?
Well, you go to the district office and you talk to the first person that's in charge of special education, I think. Okay. That's how we would have done it at our district. It's hard to tell what they would do in Maine, but you can certainly ask, I have this situation, who would I talk to? Even the superintendent would be a person to ask. Anybody would do it because you're a taxpayer and you are entitled. Your child, I mean, is entitled, even if you attend a public school, a private school, I mean.
Let me ask you this question, Pat. In your own experience, and I realize you're dealing with what you saw in Dallas, but maybe it's true elsewhere.
No, this is in California, but I live in Dallas now.
Okay. So in that case, how likely is it that the special needs programs would be overrun by this ideology? Are they relatively free from this transgender ideology, or is even that too sort of swamped with this?
Excellent question. My main thrust when I did IEP meetings and stuff and made goals was the child's development and his or her specific needs. A lot of it was behavioral because I was special ed in middle school, but a lot of it was also, learning disabilities and things like that, different teaching strategies and things. And the speech teachers will usually just focus on speech sounds. They categorize. I'm assuming it's like a speech therapist type of thing, but it could be something different.
Okay.
But they focus on sounds. I don't think they have, unless they have sentences that say, you know, Charlie wants to go to the prom, so what kind of dress should he buy or whatever.
I
don't think they're going to do something like that. I'm not being silly, but I don't.
No,
I think they focus. The goals are always on what sounds the child needs to produce and how they're going to, how they're going to accomplish it and what they think the time frame is going to be and how many meetings they need and blah, 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 things like that.
Well, so here's maybe my ignorance showing. My impression was, and maybe I'm wrong about this, was that the category or the descriptor special needs encompassed many different possible situations, not just speech therapy, or is it primarily speech therapy?
Well, in the young ages, they don't usually test for autism or things like that until they're at least in third, second grade, because they have to start looking for a development delay in language. So that's, I'm kind of operating in the dark because I don't know what kind of speech services, but typically kindergartners will come in with speech patterns that have to be worked with. They lost their L's, they don't have their endings on their words, or they're not sounding the beginnings, blends it right or anything. I'm not a speech teacher, but they did a lot of that stuff.
I see.
I knew it.
Okay.
I knew it. I was a good, had a good friend that was a speech teacher. She did a lot of that with the young ones. And also, they also had ED kids. They had kids who had issues with anxiety and things like that. There's that as well. I mean,
that's interesting.
Special education is a very, very big range of services.
I remember when I was a kid in grammar school in the 60s, maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but I don't remember there being anything like special needs accommodations for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it. It seems like only afterward when my kids were young that we began to hear about that. So
mm-hmm.
My hat's off to those who work so patiently with these children. And I'm glad that's there. That's good advice, Pat. And I appreciate you taking time to tell us about that. Thank you. We'll go now to, where are we going? Let's go now to Christine listening in Appleton, Wisconsin. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Patrick. I live not too far from your favorite cemetery.
Let me think. Is it the one that
Appleton?
I talked about on the show a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh,
yes.
My gosh, that's so beautiful.
Yes.
What's the name of it?
St. Joseph Cemetery.
It is magnificent.
It is. Yeah, it's a beautiful beautiful place to meditate, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm encouraging Molly, and she's getting lots of that, so hopefully this will really give her a boost. But we have 10 children, homeschooled for 20 plus years, and at 50, God said, I think you need one more child. And we have this wonderful little boy with Down syndrome, and he has cardiac issues and so on and so forth. So he's got all kinds of special needs. And we aren't able to homeschool. My husband also was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's, so that makes it difficult. But the good news is we just checked in with some private schools, and when we found one that said, sure, we'll take Owen, we said, yay. And so he's at a wonderful little private Catholic school. He does have an IEP, and that's an important thing for this mom to carry with her. So an individual education plan,
okay,
which means he will need some supports and services. Okay. And he's not able to do everything everyone does, but he's included and able to do what he can. He has a teacher's aide that hangs out with him predominantly. There are a couple of other kids with special needs. But I have to tell Molly that the time you expend in making something like that happen is well worth it. We drive a half an hour to this school because it is so fruitful and so holy. And, you know, it's just got everything we want in terms of a Catholic atmosphere.
That's
so
great.
She may have to work harder at having her peanuts in a private school, but it will be worth every bit of the effort. And the private school, what I've found is, families have come up to me and said, thank you for sending Owen. We're so happy our kids get a chance to meet someone like Owen. And, you know,
so your little 10th blessing has become a blessing for other people because of this opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of the politician of this school. He shakes hands and makes friends with everybody. So he brings everyone a lot of joy. He brings us a lot of joy. And what Molly doesn't want to do is put up with a school that would challenge her as a mom about her very basic morals, you know?
For sure.
I mean, we just can't do that. We don't have the time or energy for that.
And that's, and if I may interrupt, Christine, that's exactly why I said what I said to her about, I wouldn't, if I were the father of this little boy, I wouldn't allow him to stay in a school where they would put him at risk that way with this terrible ideology. I want to say how much I admire you and your husband, Christine. You sound like just perfect parents. I realize none of us is perfect, but you approach that. You're so generous and so attentive to your children. I'm sure God has a high place in heaven for you. Thank you, and God bless you. Let's go to Kathleen now in Windham, Maine. Hi, Kathleen. Where is Windham in relation to Portland?
We are literally across from Sebago Lake. We're about 40 minutes from Portland. In the southwest area. So, so I just have a really quick comment. I just flipped the radio on and happened to hear the speaker talking about who lives in, what was it, Texas or wherever. And she commented about special eds in kids with special ed needs. And she mentioned Maine, and I'm like, and she was saying, you know, reach out to the school or the school district. And she's absolutely right. I homeschooled my kids when they were really young. And we actually had our school district send us letters as their responsibility to locate families who may be in need with a child with special needs. So I actually, at the time, didn't have a child with special needs, but they sent letters out through our district. So, they claimed it was their responsibility, even to homeschooling families. So I don't know who the caller was before that she was referencing, but I just thought I'd let you guys know, as a resident of Maine, that they do consider it their responsibility to seek out any child who may have special needs. And our
That's
school district in the area was good, as I did have a child later that did have needs. They were really good at trying to be accommodating. So I just thought I'd put that out
That's
there.
That's good to know.
Homeschooling family needs it. Yep,
that is good to know.
Reach out to the local school or the district. So, or even at
Got
the
it.
State level, the Department of Education.
Got it. Well, thanks for that advice, Kathleen. It's good to know because you're there on the ground. You know what's going on. So we appreciate that. Let's see. I think I have time quickly to get to this before the next call. This is coming in from Joe, who says, and actually this just came in a little while ago. He says, I wonder if Relevant Radio will be there to report when it turns out that the reason for the precipitous decrease in Border Patrol encounters is because these illegals are instead turning themselves into the woke U.S. Army welcome wagon. Relevant Radio has a responsibility not to report everything coming out of this White House uncritically. Also, I can offer a quick overview of critical race theory. I will pass over that paragraph only because I'm already very familiar with it, but I appreciate your mention of those details. He says, it's the goal of Marxists to sow division, like the great divider Satan. They hit upon the idea of cultural Marxism, adding gender and race conflict to class warfare and an unholy trinity of hate. These three, class, gender, and race, are the three big in academia, or the big three in academia. If you do not focus your PhD studies on one of these areas, you will have no future in academia. Well, I'll pause there and say my son Theodore is a happy exception to that rule. He's doing a degree, a PhD at Hillsdale in politics, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him for obvious reasons. So he says, by the way, I mentioned Relevant Radio in general and your show in particular to everyone. In fact, I'm sure that soon people will start rolling their eyes whenever I mention Relevant Radio. Don't let me down. Okay. I'm not sure what it is that you don't want us to let you down on, but I do appreciate the email, Joe. Thank you for that. And keep in mind that this is not a news-driven network. It's a topic-driven network, and we cover all kinds of topics. Sometimes they veer into the news. We have news updates on the hour and at some of the breaks, but that's not intended for news analysis. So just be aware, and I do really appreciate the fact that you mentioned Relevant Radio to your friends. Thank you for that, and thank you for mentioning this show, too. I appreciate it, but this is not, at least my show anyway, is not news analysis. So please factor that in, and thanks for taking time to write to me. Let's go now to, I thought I did, but maybe I don't have time. Yeah, I do have time. Let's go quick. No, I don't have time. I thought I had time, but I don't have time. So we'll do it again tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel, as they say. And in the meantime, thank you yet again for your kindness and your generosity. All 14,000 plus of you who participated in our pledge drive last week, we made it. Thanks to God's grace and your generosity. If you still want to participate, you can by going to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back right after this, and I got a whole stack of emails I'm going to read right after this. Wow.